Let's take a pause this week from the standard kaiju film and look at what this fetching kids film has to offer. Will a beloved children's book make a big splash on the silver screen, or is it barking up the wrong tree? Find out with us in this giant maroon meal, because it's time to bon appetit. This is Kaiju versus History, Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your local dog catcher in way over his head, Miles. And joining me is a dog so red, everything's crimson when he sheds, Patrick. Patrick, how are you doing this doggone week?
We were this close to not doing this episode. We talked about it. We were like, this can't be on our Kaiju podcast.
I think but you froze the idea of being an April Fool's joke, and I was like, no, we've promised people. Because so here's the thing. Is Clifford a kaiju debate is the kaiju equivalent of is Die Hard a Christmas movie? And like it's kind of fun to riff about at first, and then people take it way too seriously, and it's no longer fun, and I have to hear about it every single time the conversation of this thing comes up, and it drives me insane, and I often don't want to hear people's opinions about it at all.
Well, we talked about when we started the podcast, one of the first kind of kaiju media out there was a short of like a dog that just like got super big, whose name escapes me, but it was like an animated giant kaiju dog.
You were talking about one of the early cartoon things they watched?
Yes, yeah.
Was that the Rare Bit Fiend thing?
Yes, the Rare Bit Fiend. Great memory there, Miles. And yeah, we kind of eschewed away from just giant animal movies and set our rules of what is a kaiju and what is a kaiju movie, which are different kind of criteria for our podcast. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what is a kaiju? And it's not just a large animal, it's a named sentient monster. The second rule is it should have some special characteristics that, you know, differ it from just a big creature like a elephant, you know, is not a kaiju.
Yeah.
And yeah, does the film itself play to tropes or characterizations or themes of kaiju cinema? That's kind of what we work with here. And
Clifford skates the line.
Clifford is there. You know, Clifford has. Is it, you know, the movie is about
Clifford's
him.
Clifford's a dog that's red, all right?
But is magically grown. That's the important thing. So
this film absolutely leads into that, where there's a magical element. And also, like, because I did read Clifford books when I was a kid, because this series goes back to like the 60s, I think.
Yeah, it was like 63.
There's Clifford adventures where an alien gives Clifford the ability to like read minds or something. So like Clifford has had like extra normal powers outside of a dog. And in this film, it's important to notate that Clifford is not anything but a few weeks old by the end of this movie. So he is puppy. We don't know what, like, this would be like fighting Godzilla when it was just a little hatchling. So
yeah,
how, because Clifford's already like half of a building size as a puppy, so a full and he looks like a lab, and full labs compared to their puppy size,
yeah,
he is legendary creature sized at full.
Well,
at full
one of my favorite images from the book series is like the book is like Clifford wants to be a fireman or something like that, and it's him like putting out a fire in like a two-story house, and he's like towering over it. I was like, all right, man, that's all I need to see. Clifford's kaiju.
Well, that and like, I know how Clifford can put out a fire.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. This movie also so much more PG-13 than I thought it was going to be. We see.
But not as much as I really thought it was going to be. Like, I thought there would be a lot more dog has to pee and poo jokes than there was. And there was like one.
Yeah, just the one. But yeah, that out of the way, Yeah, we're talking about Clifford this week.
Clifford the Big Red Dog. Before we get involved, Patrick, what is in a title?
Well, as I said, this movie we mentioned should be called Clifford the Big Red Puppy, but the property, obviously they wanted to start with him as a puppy to sell kids' toys, and then they're going to have him grow up over the course of the Clifford trilogy.
It's super easy to sell a puppy dog, you know?
So the book series, I did not know it was this old. It was first published in 1963 by Norman Bridwell. There are 91 books in total. The last couple were released posthumously after the author died. The original painting from 62, the author had named the dog Tiny. So Tiny the Big Red Dog, I guess, which is, you know, a fun, you know, jokey name, but it would have made sense for this puppy because, like, as a just a regular dog before he got big in this movie, it was like super tiny. It seemed like a lot smaller. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is a puppy, like you said.
Puppies are tiny.
The author's wife, Norman's wife, suggested Clifford after her childhood friend. And Emily Elizabeth is named after their daughter, their real life daughter. A few different names in various countries for this film. A big red dog named Clifford is what you can find it under some countries, including Azerbaijan. It just went by Clifford in a few locations. My favorite is the Japanese title, which is like
so good.
It's like 20 pieces of kanji, and it translates to "I'm Clifford, the Big Red Puppy." And the Japanese are truth in advertising.
Yep, they didn't lie.
Big Dog Clifford and the Giant Red Dog are some of the other titles this went by. You know, you're selling exactly what you're offering to the public, so it makes sense.
Yeah, look, this movie, I have to say, requires an insulin shot because this thing is so saccharine and sweet. It is so disgustingly cute, and it is like the CGI Clifford is adorable. They had like just the right girl playing Emily Elizabeth, and I even liked not James Marsden as Uncle Casey.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. The entire time I was like, oh, they really just couldn't get James Marsden and just hired this guy.
Well, yeah, he's a British actor. And I feel like I had seen him before, but I thought I looked up his IMDb and I was like, I don't really recognize him.
He's in the A League of Their Own show.
Whitehall.
And I know the British show Bad Education. I don't know if I've watched all of it.
It's so funny. I watched that League of Their Own show and I just did not. Oh, wait, no. A League of Their Own. It says he's a panelist. It's a game show he was on.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean the baseball. So I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I've not heard of this one.
Yeah, it's a sports comedy game. I watch all those weird British quiz shows mostly because if any of them have included Noah Fielding or Richard Ayoade, I have to watch it.
Well, that's a lot. That's a lot of shows.
I'll watch a lot of those quiz shows. I know he's in Inside Number 9, and so he's popped up in things. And according to his thing, he is. Oh, yeah, he's in Good Omens. That's probably where I've seen him.
Yeah, says the witch hunter. Yeah, he's, I gotta say,
but he's also not James Marsden. And I'm sorry, but like, absolutely was cast because he looks very much like James Marsden.
Oh, he reminded me of another actor as far as personality was concerned. And it's not.
Was it James Marsden?
No, stop saying James Marsden. The guy that plays Boimler on
Jack Quaid. I can totally see that.
But it's not that actor. It's another guy that's like super similar to him. But I thought he was great. I thought he.
Oh, he was. He was very. He was very like. I'm
a lot of very funny jokes.
The entire time I was like, that's just not James Marsden. But he was he was good as the affable adult. He did exactly what he needed to do. I thought the kid was great. This movie also gets an extra half star for the inclusion of legend David Alan Greer, who I love very, very much.
He doesn't have a lot in here. Tony
no, he
Hale
does not.
Is like the real main bad guy. He has a lot of funny, jokey stuff. But
Tony Hale just doesn't get enough credit for like the work he does, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like, I love Tony Hale. I think he's just a great comedian and great actor. And I'm really looking forward to watching that movie sketch where he gets to play a dad who is his daughter basically makes these horrific animals come to life.
Oh, no.
But it looks really solid. I'm a big fan. You got John Cleese as the magical, like, animal rescue guy who kind of gifts Clifford away.
He's named after the author of the books, Bridwell. And yeah, he doesn't have like a ton of jokey stuff. He has a couple of fun little quippy things he gets to say, but
you have Horatio Sands playing a role that I would often say that, oh, that's a George Lopez, Lee Goodman kind of role. Like 100%.
Yeah, there's a lot of smaller, like, jokey actors. There's actually a couple of SNL folks. Because,
yeah, you got Kean Thompson as the vet.
yeah. It just seems like a miscast for him. But
I mean, it's fun to see him there.
Alex Moffat, another SNL guy, was Tony Hale's assistant in the film.
Oh, yeah. And he's great.
A lot of fun little
roles. Or
as
some call him, not Colin Jost.
Yeah, I honestly forgot who he was because he left a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there's just so many like weird tiny cameos. Like Rosie Perez is in the movie for like two lines. Like if you blink, you will miss Rosie Perez as Lucille, the receptionist.
But she gives them the whole down low about Bridwell.
Yeah, I guess that's, she's so integral to the plot.
You also have like this weird thing that's become kind of a trope with the like the little Asian best friend who also has a crush on the lead person. That is something that comes up a lot in like kids movies in the last 15 years for some reason.
Yeah. And to be honest, I caught a whiff and I had to like go and do some research. I was like, why is his dad like a super important like Chinese business mogul? I was like, please don't tell me there is a like a Chinese production company making Clifford the Big Red Dog. Nope, it's just kind of the way they decided to go, because the original plan was to like shipping container move Clifford to like basically a farm in China to like a reserve in China. Which doesn't work out, but
yeah, I remember him opposite Jet Li in Romeo Must Die. That's how I remember him.
who the father?
The father, yeah,
yeah.
Because he's he's actually an American actor, but has worked a lot in Hong Kong. And because I think it's a weird thing, because I remember reading it, looking him up. Like he was born in New York, but I mean, obviously he has Chinese parents. Then moved to Hong Kong and learned Mandarin to star in movies there.
Right. And he's in a bunch of Vanishing Sun films, which is it says TV movies, but I guess it was like a series of TV movies. Vanishing Sun. I wonder if.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen this. I mostly know him
Kung Fu from series.
I'm not going to pretend that I know he's in The Prophecy 2, even though I own and love The Prophecy 2, which is a trilogy. Well, it was a trilogy, and to me still is just a trilogy of films starring Christopher Walken. Also has an early Viggo Mortensen appearance as the devil. Great movies. But yeah, no, this movie is chock full of like random folks.
Yeah. It's an interesting cast. I gotta say, you know, looking at the director, Walter Becker, I didn't have like super high hopes. He did direct Van Wilder, but also the
he directed Wild Hogs,
the Tim Allen vehicle Wild Hogs. I guess he's worked with Travolta a few times. Wild Hogs and Old Dogs is two movies in a row. Yeah,
just making weird comedies for 50-year-olds.
Look, he's got almost every movie. Is an animal movie of his. He did Buying the Cow, Wild Hogs, Old Dogs.
But Wild Hogs, while it has hogs in the name, motorcycles.
I'm just saying, there's animals in the title. Alvin and the Chipmunks, and then Clifford.
Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Yeah, Clifford the Big Red Dog. But I was actually pretty pleasantly surprised by this film in general. There are bits of the CGI on Clifford that are really rough, like when they're integrating towards the end of the movie, Emily Elizabeth riding on CGI Clifford. It's like, ugh, you know, I kind of wish that they had done some practical. Unfortunately, Clifford is all CGI all the time. Or fortunately, you know, at least that
color correct an actual puppy.
Well, at the beginning, that's what I was confused about. It's like why they couldn't have done that, because even when Clifford is small, he is all CGI. I was like and people aren't going to tell the difference between this real dog and like a CGI big dog, you know.
And to be clear, even the CGI, he's flipping cute. That dog is adorable.
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious they must have scanned like a real cutie patootie.
Oh, that's a golden retriever puppy if there was one.
Yeah, and
his mom is a golden retriever, so that makes
sense. Yep. He's a little runt of the litter we see in the beginning of the movie getting picked up by the dog snatchers, the pound. But yeah, a very, very cute model. Like you said, it could have grown bigger. If we had gotten Clifford 2, I think we would have seen a bit of a bigger pooch, bigger hound.
Maybe Clifford could fight like a cat or something.
I do like the main conflict of this, which is like an evil food corporation trying to grow giant crops
but I love this because even though it's the bad guys, their aim is not bad. Their aim is to make bigger food to help feed the world. I feel like that's come up several times in kaiju cinema before, of trying to make big food. And I like, it's such a kid's book thing, but there's so much about this movie, and you and I talked about this. This movie feels and looks as if it was made in like 1996.
It's crazy because they could have made this movie really timeless, but there's just like three or four super dated references, like dated the second it came out. Like if they had taken them out, this movie could have been made in like I said, any decade in the last 30 years. But,
like if this came out in the 1990s with the Olsen twins as like, you know,
the two twin daughters, both Emily and Elizabeth.
Emily and Elizabeth. Because that's what would have happened. They would have gotten the Olsen twins. They would have played twin daughters, which that gag would have popped up several times in trying to trick people. And maybe they didn't have to rely on Jill Valentine as their mom. Because the mom is Jill Valentine in the Resident Evil movies.
I saw that.
Some other things, but I just saw Jill Valentine. I was like, yep. I know you from somewhere. Mistakes.
They could have tied in the Olsen twins into this genetics lab, because we do get a subplot of splicing sheep and making also two-headed sheep,
which I was like, the mean sheep is coming back. I knew it. And also, the kind of Serbian style old lady who lives in the building, who is clearly only cast because Cloris Leachman had passed.
I'm not joking, a good role.
Because if you look at her late career in sitcoms, in Malcolm in the Middle and in Raising Hope, I'm a big Cloris Leachman fan. Like that's what she did, and she played roles exactly like that. And that was so Cloris Leachman coded that I was like, I loved her. I loved her so much. And the condensed milk gag was so great.
Yeah. Was she just carrying that on her at all times? Like when they get to the lab.
She has a whole purse of condensed milk.
Condensed milk all over. Yeah, Cloris Leachman is great. She really went there in Raising Hope in her latter years.
As Mama. Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah. Meemaw or...
Mama.
Mama. This movie, besides being very 90s coded, I feel like, I just feel like the story is very out of the 90s. I think some of the writing, and maybe the most, and just something that maybe I don't watch that many kids movies, but the score, the soundtrack was, it really does feel like they copied soundtracks from the 90s. You know, those like
1,000%.
Gosh, I don't even know who the composer would be in those films, but like any feel good kids film from the 90s, I had that sweeping kind of soundtrack that was like really like you said, need that insulin shot. Really sweet.
This person did do. Let me read some of the credits from the composer.
John Debney.
Jetsons the movie. Hocus Pocus. White Fang 2. Little Giants. House Guest.
Yes. Like Little Giants. That is one immediately that came to mind.
Even the infamous Mickey Short Runaway Brain. So 90s. Wait,
hold on. He did the soundtrack along with Peter Hames for The Relic?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Liar, Liar, I Know You Last Summer. So, yeah, Inspector Gadget, End of Days.
Yeah, there's some weird ones in Peter here.
But no, so there is 100% like this guy was making these kind of movies in the 90s, and the vibe is there.
Yeah,
he also did Elf. Okay, so he's done New York crazy stuff before.
That's the other thing, is the setting of like a really kid-friendly New York City is very 90s movie coded. Yeah. It just feels like every single one was about some you know, a little too grown up for their age kid that is like completely desensitized to New York City.
Yeah, knowing he did the music for Elf makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Also The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah, we joked about doing this movie for years now, you know, ever since it was like, I think announced. I was joking with people like, you know, is Clifford a kaiju kind of thing. I think this works as a fun little kids kaiju film. There's not really any scenes of destruction, you know?
There's a lot of cars, and there's a park that gets wrecked by Clifford. Yeah. Certainly some human balls. Wait, that's the wrong phrasing. The inflatable things that people can like move around.
The Zorbs or whatever they are. That was a very fun sequence. Yeah,
not human balls. I said
the first the time phrase. Clifford kind of gets outside, it's like, oh, okay, they're gonna do some cool stuff here.
Yeah, and I mean, yes, he doesn't go on like a full on destruction route, but he's also not supposed to be like, he's a puppy, and you're supposed to be on his side. Fully. And that's, I think, the most unrealistic thing about this ending is like a bunch of New Yorkers are like, no, 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 we are down with this gigantic dog being in our neighborhood that is like weeks old. And if you compare your golden retriever to the like palm of your hand size when it was a newborn puppy, like that dog is going to cause some problems. And I'm sorry, in the credits, they make a giant like firehouse sized dog house for him.
Yeah, that's classic.
I've spent plenty of time in New York. That would never happen.
there is. Oh yeah. I mean that dog house cost like $3 million.
Not only that, but like the neighborhood would tolerate him for like that long.
Yeah. So we're talking about the seriousness of the film.
Yeah, we got to talk about the seriousness of Clifford.
God, I forgot what I was going to say. We're just joking. Sorry. We're joking too hard, Miles.
We are joking too hard.
Speaking of joking too hard,
I really wish there was more David Alan Grier in this movie because I love him so much.
Yeah. He's got just a very, very small role. But
plays a character that certainly leans into his strengths. Just being a curmudgeon-y super.
Yes. Pretty middling scores for Clifford. It did not ignite the children's movie.
It came out November 21, but it was still like high pandemic times.
Well, they pushed it back, and then they pushed it back into another kind of spike at the tail end of 2021 of the SARS, you know, COVID-2 Delta variant. And that was a scary time because we're like, is this thing going to keep, you know, escalated, multiplying? Yeah. Is it going to keep escalating? Is this going to be worse than the first strain? Blah, blah, blah. But, you know, thankfully by, you know, 6 months later, it kind of died down. But yeah, it did release on Paramount Plus not too long after its initial release. So I feel like a lot of people probably saw it digitally.
Yeah, and I did see at one point that Paramount was planning a sequel. I haven't heard anything since then. It's been 4 years, so probably not.
Yeah, it's just one of those ones I feel like they could do at any time. I will say, there's parts of this movie that bothered me, and one of them is that it is it takes place over such a short period of time. It is like a weekend, you know? Yeah. Whereas I guess one of the fun things of the 90s movies that we were robbed of was like a montage of like training Clifford over the course. Like they're in crisis mode the entire time. I would have mm-hmm. liked to have seen some slice of life montage bits of like the mom comes back and she's trying to help deal with it or something like that. And
because the movie goes into like, and Clifford was a help to everybody, you know?
Yeah. I definitely want to see the sequel. It feels like this is just the beginning of the,
I would absolutely love to see a sequel to this movie. I mean, like it's a very sweet movie. I felt bad that we've had such a busy weeks for prepping for vacation. So my fiance didn't have a chance to watch this because this is
goodness.
This is such a Krista Coden movie.
The number one with a bullet.
Yeah, and I told her because she asked me how it was. I was like, "You are going to love it so much. You are this little girl 100%." And it's a saccharine sweet movie. It really is.
I do kind of wish with Clifford himself we'd gotten something a little different from an actual dog, like maybe just a little more cartoony of a face, you know?
I think a little bit more of him looking like the books, like the kind of typical art would have might helped a little bit.
Just like slightly bigger eyes or less animal eyes, you know.
You can't give them full cartoon, like Sonic movies.
Yeah.
Sonic like Sonic, you know?
Yeah. Are you ready to rate Clifford the Big Red Dog,
Miles? Yeah.
Where are you standing on your enjoyment of this film?
So I mean, this is a disgustingly cute movie. It's very sweet. It's a feel-good little movie. I really feel like it's a lost 90s film in some ways, but I don't have a whole lot of bad things to say other than like this movie was never going to be more than what it was, which is like just a very good adaptation of a beloved children's book, but it only does that. Like it's a very superficial surface level movie. That said, it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's a tight, you know, 90 minute movie. Or maybe 96 minutes.
Pretty short.
And the dog is cute. And I mean, the movie doesn't really kind of spin its wheels a lot. It pretty much goes. And I appreciate that. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a good time. It's not gonna knock your socks off. It is certainly not like some kids movie that like is next level. It certainly isn't like the greatest of Pixar or anything like that. But I mean, it's a very competently well-made, sweet movie. And I had a good time with it, but at the same time, I just had a good time. So I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. I think it's a very solid little movie. And if this kind of thing sounds cute to you or cute is in your oeuvre of things you want to see, I highly recommend it. How about you?
I mean, if you're looking for a very similar movie, I would check out also Bong Joon-ho's Okja, which I'm just remembering. I have like the exact same plot. Okja.
Except, Okja's it's a little different.
Big red dog. It's a big old pig.
Yeah, but it's a genetically modified pig. Also done to like, you know, help feed the world.
I was like, so many similar plots. It's so crazy.
You also get Jake Gyllenhaal clearly on cocaine, which is glorious.
I saw on Letterboxd someone compared this to Stuart Little, which is definitely one of those later 90s CGI films. I feel like
I could see that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but just the pacing, the soundtrack, the characters, the comedy is all very classic family for me. A little boring as an adult, but there were still jokes that I found very funny. There's still some visual gags that were very good. But yeah, it was just missing one or two things that could have really knocked it out of the park.
I agree.
Like I said, I think this movie being set over the course of a weekend was a little bit of a detriment to it. It was a little frenetic at parts. But yeah, I wanted the dog to grow up and be with the girl for a little bit before maybe the crisis started.
So like neutering that dog is going to be like absolutely horrible.
Oh, goodness gracious. Miles, what did you score this movie? I'm sorry.
7.
I'm right there with you. 7 out of 10. I think it is very good. I think it's very competent. There's not a lot of stuff that I can, you know, I don't know if I had a child, I would or was in charge of taking care of a child for an extended period of time. There's so many worse things to put on than Clifford the Big Red Dog movie. Is definitely one that folks can enjoy for its technical aspects. Special effects are really good. I kind of wish they were less good and maybe we had some more practical puppy bits in the film. But yeah, perfectly fine kids script, some great acting, very simple kind of jokes and setups here. But I'm giving it an 8 out of 10 for its technical. I think technically it is a much better movie than what I enjoyed on the screen. I'm actually surprised that the critics were so harsh on it. It's like, what's there to hate about this movie?
You know? Yeah, I mean, it's a cute dog movie. Like, what, like,
and based on just a beloved book series.
Yeah, which are also cute little books. They're children's, but I don't know what you're expecting. Like,
yeah,
you know, Laurence Olivier's Clifford the Big Red Dog. Like, cough. Like, stop
like, it, critics.
No, I'm right there with you. I do think that I'm with you in that I do wish the script kind of I'm gonna invoke a 90s kids animal movie. I think I wish the script was a little more Andre. Like,
oh yeah.
Where you get some trials and tribulations and you really get some scope and some distance of time. I get the whole vibe that, oh, the mom's gone for a weekend, so we gotta tell us all in a weekend. And I do think that hurts the movie script-wise. But that said, like, the dog looks great. Yes, there's some couple uncanny valid things, but most of the special effects look good. The acting is solid. The little girl is fantastic.
Their acting
is very, very good.
He's very
funny. Sorry, I'm not going to know his name. He's just not James Marsden. It's well directed. The score, it hits the right notes. Like, I'm right there with you on the 8 out of 10. Like, okay. I was originally going to give it a 7, but, like, I'm thinking about, like, everything that I would knock against it. I'm like, yeah, I wish the script was stronger, but, like, it's not a weak script. Like, it's a very decent movie. And, frankly, out of all the stuff that we get for kids that are, like, I mean, this is, I'm not going to say it's not sanitized, but like this, it just feels like a feel good kids movie. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think it's not really a kaiju movie. I think while Clifford is a kaiju, this isn't what you would expect from a kaiju movie. You know, it is there's so many things you could have done, just like small tweaks to make it like, you know, a kaiju film, part of the Clifford book series. And, you know, it's why it's such a great kids book is Clifford is very clumsy. And it's one of the things that is brought forth in his character in this movie is he's a puppy.
He's wagging his tail.
Yeah, he's wagging his tail. He's knocking things over. He's breaking scales and, you know, destroying the Zorb. This movie needed a lot more destruction and like kid friendly destruction to, you know, maybe turn the city against Clifford at one point, you know.
Clifford needs to start a fire where someone goes, we're going to join daddy soon.
Yeah, well, that's what I would like. Because, like I said, that's one of my favorite of those books as a kid was, you know, maybe Clifford doesn't start the fire, but people think he does, but he helps put the fire out. And yeah, part of that was also like, Clifford was also like a really intelligent dog. Clumsy but intelligent, and
it's also important to know that Clifford is a newborn baby.
That's the thing. We couldn't get his character that much because he's just like everything he sees in this movie, he sees for the first time, you know.
Right.
But yeah, for its importance, it's a unique film, but a great children's book. And as much as I love it, I don't think it's a super important kaiju film. You know, if you're trying to get every kaiju, you can skip this movie. You could read one Clifford book in like 2 minutes,
10 minutes, yeah,
and get kind of like the same vibe. So I'm giving a 4 out of 10 for its importance, which is, you know, low, but yeah, it's not super kaiju film esque. What about you, Miles?
I'm not too far away from you. I'm a little more positive on it just because like he is a puppy. And so, like, we can't ding him for being a baby. But at the same time, I'm right there with you. It's not really a kaiju movie. And they're not really the thing is, the filmmakers are not interested in telling a kaiju story. They're interested in telling.
Why not?
I agree. Why not? But they're not interested in doing that. They're interested in just telling a story about Clifford the Big Red Dog. And that does hurt it. of course, people love the conversation, it's clever to kaiju. And I mean, yeah, it's a fun conversation to have until people get real too serious about it. So I'm middle of the road on this one. I'm going to give it a 5. Like, it's not really a kaiju movie, but it's certainly not a bad one. And if you're like, hey, I wanted to watch Clifford because, you know, some people say he's a kaiju. I'm like, yeah, he's a big red dog. And you're going to watch a movie about a big red dog. And that's it. Like, and that's the weird line for me is like, there is a magical element. So you can't say that he's totally not a kaiju or a daikaiju because he's a puppy. And he's a puppy the size of half the size of a Manhattan apartment building. So, you know, when he grows up, he is going to be a legendary monster sized creature, but that's it. Like, yeah. he's still at this point, he has nothing other than being red and big to him. He is just a dog, which to me is still kind of in the big animal aspect of it to make him kaiju adjacent rather than being a kaiju. Again, don't come at me. I don't care. I genuinely do not. If you consider Clifford a kaiju, that's cool. I'm not going to dispute it. Do I personally view Clifford as a kaiju? Maybe. But I also just don't care about that conversation. I'm sorry.
I'll never tell. Maybe.
But Patrick had like said, hey, why don't we do this on April 1st? And I was like, no, we promised people we were going to do this movie. Let's just do it.
Yeah, and I'm kind of glad we did because
I am too.
Spoiler warning, we have like a trio of kids kaiju movies that we're going to be doing here in a row with this one. So it's just something in the water, something in the air after the pandemic.
Hey, look, after a lot of American independent crap that we've watched, having like one awesome independent kaiju movie and then this one being at least watchable and fun, I'm glad to be back in a situation where the US is not making just utter garbage. So there's that. Yep.
Very watchable children's film. I'm giving it a high 6 out of 10. I'm at a low six. You're at a high 6. we're averaging these down to a 6 out of 10 for the podcast total.
I'm perfectly happy with that.
Yeah. So it is right around there, which is good to very good on our scale. And I think for a kids movie, it definitely is right. If
does your brain go off?
I was entering the scores in our spreadsheet here, but I was also thinking of if I wanted to throw you on the brush. Yeah, if you want to argue with Miles about if Clifford is a kaiju or not.
It's the same thing about Die Hard as a Christmas movie. I don't want to talk about it at all.
Yeah, if you want to yell at Miles, go on Blue Sky. We're at Kaiju versus History. You can find us on our... You can email us kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. Send us an email on Blue Sky. We just got some notes in over this last week. I guess it's like a month and a half from when we're recording this, but Jared, thank you so much for following us there. Sent us some fun things to look at. We should probably go ahead and just re-skeet these, but that is
skeet.
Yeah, that's what they're called, right? Skeets.
Skeets.
Instead of no, sky not. Tweets. What are they called then, Miles?
But huh? All skeet, come on.
he did send something along, which is a Mecha Gamera on Etsy, which is the first time I've seen this. Is a Iron Shell Mecha Gamera inspired 3D printed collectible. It is as cool as it sounds. I'll send this along.
That sounds awesome.
In our Discord, if you follow the Cosmic Crit podcast, or if you've heard of our Discord channel from listening to this podcast, we got a whole sub channel dedicated to Kaiju versus History where we talk everything Kaiju news related, as well as share our hauls, our Kaiju merch hauls, t-shirts, toys, and movies. But yeah, also check out our Letterboxd accounts where you can see our reviews in 5-star format. We're a little above the Letterboxd curve. This movie got a 2.4 out of 5 on Letterboxd, and we'd be giving it a 3 out of 5, right? 3 out of 5? Yes. Miles, what are we going to do next week?
Well, thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners. And we're going to catch you next time when we continue to count down of the American kaiju films of the 2020s, with an animated movie relegated to digital release over the end of the pandemic. Can a world with colorful talking kaiju make for a smash streaming hit? Find out along with us next time on History versus Rumble.